On this Bandara Nayak commemoration day, we recall with poignant sorrow how tragically, by the cruel hand of an assassin, Mother Lanka lost her great son, the late Prime Minister, the Honorable S.W.R. Dias Bandara Nayak, before he could complete the task he had undauntedly undertaken in a spirit not of pride or elation, but of service and dedication foreign on behalf of the common man of Ceylon. Mr. Bandara Nayak to the common man was the symbol of his surging aspirations, deeply felt and inwardly entertained, though inadequately expressed, for all those freedoms which safeguard man's self-respect and secure decent, honest, and fair dealing between man and man. When Mr. Bandara Nayak returned from Oxford in the year 1925, many careers were open to him with his brilliance and background, all of them alluring to a high degree and all of them equally promising. He could have entered the arena of law and ended up as the first Ceylonese Chief Justice. He could have followed in the footsteps of his father and forebears and become an important member of the establishment, gaining the imperial honors that were invariably associated with the official hierarchy. He could have chosen a life of ease and luxury, so highly esteemed during those days. He could have selected a life of calm and quiet, or one of expensive hobbies or immoderate reading. Yet, he did not choose any of these. Instead, he preferred the perilous path of a politician and a public servant in the real sense of the term, though he well knew that such a path offered no ready rewards, but often toil, tears, and sweat. It is significant that Mr. Bandara Nayak described the life of a politician thus in his maiden speech delivered on the floor of the State Council 30 years back in the year 1931. You will find that the politician's life throughout the ages has been a very hard one. The whole fate of the politician or statesman depends upon incalculable factors, upon such a thing as popular favor. The value of that we all know. Throughout his life he devotes to the public service. He has to work and give his whole mind and soul to the public, and very often at the end of it there is no praise. He is spurned and scorned by the very people whom he served. And still, Mr. Bandara Nayak selected politics. The clue to his choice is found in the speech he made 20 years after, on the occasion of his resignation from the cabinet. From a very early age, I felt strongly within me the urge to serve the people of my country to the best of my ability, an urge which almost amounted to a feeling of dedication. In performing this high duty according to my lights, there have been many difficulties that I have had to face from time to time. I shall be guilty of a crime against the people of my country, to whose service I have dedicated myself, if I permitted personal considerations of any kind to come between me and my duty as I conceive it to my country. I am only too well aware of the forces that may be arrayed against me. Pride and power, influence, money, and even misrepresentation and distortion are all weapons that might be used against me. Against these, the weapons that I possess are humility and sincerity in the service of my people and all the high principles for which I shall humbly seek the confidence of the people of this country. This confidence, he sought, was given him by the people in ample and adequate measure in the year 1956, renewed and reaffirmed in the year 1960. What he sought to achieve for the people of this country may be gleaned from his speech, which he made when His Royal Highness the Duke of Gloucester opened Ceylon's Parliament in the year 1948, a speech unsurpassed yet in point of its theme or thought language or eloquence. On this historic occasion, Mr. Bandaranaike said, "We must not, we cannot, allow our newly regained freedom to run the risk of remaining merely a theoretical concept, a thing dead and without real meaning for the vast mass of the people. We must see that it quickens into a life of greater happiness and prosperity for us all. Political freedom comes alive only when it is utilized to achieve other freedoms, freedom from poverty, freedom from disease, freedom from ignorance, freedom from fear. Nor is that all. We have to fan the flickering flame of democracy so that each individual is assured of those freedoms for which democracy has always stood and which safeguard man's self-respect and secure, decent, honest, and fair dealing between man and man. In a wider sphere, we must enter into friendly relations with other nations of the world and play our part worthily in all international organizations in order that we may make our fullest contribution, small though it may be, to the peace and prosperity of all mankind." The objectives that are implicit in this speech were later formulated by him in the form of a political party program whose salient features I would like to state as follows. They are, in the realm of external affairs, a policy of dynamic neutralism. In internal matters, a successful application of the concept of harmonious conflict. In the economic and political spheres, democratic socialism. A firm faith in the common man and woman of Ceylon. Awareness of the dangers of neo-colonialism and of the exploitation of the bogey of communism. Recognition of and respect for the rights of minorities, restoration of Buddhism to its rightful place, and the equal encouragement in a qualitative sense of all of the cultures that had been suppressed or had suffered during the dark and dismal days of foreign rule lasting over four centuries, when the educational system in vogue failed to produce integrated personalities, when traditional virtues and values were undermined, and habits like drink and gambling, previously considered manners befitting the low-born, became acceptable fashions mistakenly identified with culture and civilization. The resolution which Mr. Bandaranaike moved at the annual conference of the Sri Lanka Freedom Party on the first day of March 1958 explains in succinct terms his conception of democratic socialism. Therein, he draws the distinction between democratic capitalism and democratic socialism and includes the additional factor of the revival and fostering of culture and religion. Mr. Bandaranaike did not, in 1951, resign from the cabinet in a passing mood of irritation. Instead, he took that step on account of the growing conviction in him. The complex questions confronting the government then clamored not for just adjustments but for real solutions, and that the problems of Ceylon could not be adequately solved via a social welfare state. There were really two problems, he felt. We have really two problems, a problem within a problem. The first problem is to convert a colonial society into a free society. The second problem is to achieve that task against the background of a world that is itself changing. As I explained to you earlier, we are to convert a colonial society, politically, economically, socially, administratively, and so on, into a free society. And we have also to do that against the background of a world which is itself changing. He concluded, the future of Ceylon lay in the direction of democratic socialism. For this end, he strove hard throughout the subsequent years and succeeded against sustained and strong opposition. Thus did Mr. Bandaranaike lead the people to their destiny and their freedoms, thereby ushering in the era of the common man, which gave him self-respect and stature. Mr. Bandaranaike will always be remembered as the most outstanding figure in the parliamentary or legislative arena of our country, and he will live in history as Ceylon's architect of democratic socialism and the people's Prime Minister of Ceylon.
You have been listening to a tribute to our late Prime Minister, Mr. S.W.R.D. Bandaranaike, by Senator A.M.A. Aziz.